And so do I. No, that's really cool. I resist the urge to touch his shoulder. Who is he? I am officially Dree. All I want are more details. Dried tubers? I know, right? Like, what the hell are dried tubers? Later, I lie down on my daybed, prop my feet up on its curved edge. I am with SN. SN. You've been quiet today, so how was your day? Go. Me. Look at that. You do have a shift key. Day equals not too bad. Yours? SN. Good, actually. Me. Tell me three things I don't know about you. You know, besides your name and, well, everything else. Huh. Apparently my afternoon with Ethan has left me braver. Reckless. When we said goodbye next to my car, he put his hands in his jeans pocket, rocked back on his heels, and said, "Till next time." Till next time. Three words that sound good together like that. All in a row. Poetic. SN. Okay. One, I'm making amazeballs grilled cheese. Me, amazeballs? SN, yep. So good it justifies the use of the word amazeballs. Two, I went through a Justin Timberlake phase in sixth grade and called him JT. Like, yo, what up? It's JT on the radio. Yeah, it was bad. Not my best year. Me, I'll admit it. I'm still going through a Justin Timberlake phase. And three? SN. I don't know. May keep this one to myself. Me. Come on. You keep everything to yourself. SN. Tell me three things, and then maybe. Me. One. I have this whole weird theory of the universe that I don't actually believe but like to think about. Like we are something tiny and insignificant, like ants, to some larger, more complex species. Which sort of explains all the weird random things that can happen, like hurricanes and cancer. OMG, I can't believe I just told you that. I've never said that out loud before, not even to Scarlett. Hashtag embarrassed. SN, that's a little weird, and yet possibly brilliant. Hashtag impressed. Me, I know, right? SN, Google the Fermi paradox. Will blow your mind. And two? Me. Two. I have trouble remembering my times tables. I mean, I can do calculus and stuff, no problem, but basic math, not so much. Me. Just Googled Fermi. How do you know that kind of thing off the top of your head? SN. I don't know. Just do. Three. Me. You only gave me two. SN. Three. I like you. Me. Three. I like you too. Crap, I did it again. Hit send without thinking. Who do I like? Who is this person? It's not a lie. I like his words. I spend my day looking forward to writing to him, hearing his thoughts on stuff. But to just come out and say, "I like you," without knowing who he is, with this ridiculous imbalance? He knows who I am. Probably where I live. Is just plain stupid. I'm asking for some sort of cosmic smackdown. Can I take it back? How do I do that? Do I just let it lie? Enjoy for a moment that a guy, and yes, I realize I say that hopefully, that he is an actual guy from Wood Valley and not some sort of joke or something totally weird I hadn't thought of, like a cop who tries to catch child predators online or something, actually likes me? Me. I'm not sure that, other than maybe in sixth grade, when Leo Springer passed me a note that said, "Let's go out!" exclamation points, and was then my boyfriend for approximately 22 hours, because I forgave the excessive punctuation, but not his excessive hand sweating, which I later felt bad about when it turned out he had a serious glandular issue. Any guy has ever said anything like those words to me. I like you. Screw it. I'm going to take a moment to revel. No, this is too weird. I'm not reveling. I'm freaking out. Me, This is too weird. I don't even know who you are. Let's dial it back. SN. Dial it back from I like you? Okay, not sure what that means. SN. I like you in my world means I think you're cool. Whatever. Relax, lady. I'm not proposing. Me. Shut up. It's just... forget it. SN. It's just what? Me. Never mind. Seriously, forget it. SN. Come on, tell me. Me. It's just weird that you know who I am and I don't know who you are. It's not fair. SN. Life isn't fair. Me. Fine, whatever. Gotta go. I put my phone down for a second. I'm angry. Deflated. So he doesn't like me. He just thinks I'm cool. It wasn't like I was saying he thinks I'm the best thing in the world. It's just... it felt good to be liked. Whatever that means. SN. Wait, stop. Come back. I'm sorry. Me. And? SN. It's just that I like talking to you here. Like this. I meant it. I do like you. IRL? You make me nervous or something. It would just be different to actually talk. And this works, right? Me. Yeah, but... SN. I'll give you three more things. One, I like music and books and video games more than people. People make me awkward. Two, I used to sleep with a blanket when I was little, which I called... wait for it. Blanket, and okay, fine. I still do. Three, a year ago, I was a totally different person. Me. Why? Who were you? SN. Happy? Or happier? Simpler? A bit more normal, if that's even a thing. Me. And then? A long beat. I wait. SN. My sister died. Suddenly. Long story. And now, well, you know how it is. Me. Yeah. SN. Your mom died, right? Am I allowed to ask that? Me. How did you... SN. Theo. I mean, he didn't tell me, but someone told me that you're his stepsister, so I sort of put it together. Is it okay that I asked you that? I seem to have lost all sense of what you are allowed to say to people. Me. Yes. It's okay. To ask, I mean. The fact of it is... well, not okay. I don't know. It's... SN. Yeah, it's... me. Right. SN. How long ago? Me. 765 days, 5 hours, 22 minutes. You? SN. 196 days, 1 hour, 3 minutes. Me. You count too? SN. I count too. I think about SN's sister. I don't know why, but I picture a 12-year-old girl. Pigtails. Sick. But of course, that's all in my imagination. I have too many questions. How old was she? How did she die? Then again, she's no longer here. That's what matters. The hows are again mere detail. Later. Not now. Maybe I'll ask later. SN. So yesterday I saw a rainbow, and my annoying phone was dead from IMing with you, and it was almost like it didn't happen because I didn't take a picture. Please tell me you saw it too. SN. Because sometimes I feel like I'm losing my mind. I want to know for a fact that it happened. You know that feeling? I pause. Yesterday, on my way to work, it rained for no more than 30 seconds, the first rain I've experienced since moving here. And then the clouds shifted. And yes, SN is right. There was part of a rainbow, arched across half of the sky, so rainbow-like in its rainbowness, it made me feel almost silly. like I lived in a cartoon. And I'm embarrassed to admit it, but for a second, I thought it was a message from my mom, or that somehow it was her, in a way that I could not and still cannot explain. I took a picture but didn't bother to Instagram it. I didn't want to seem like I was trying to be all free-spiritish, which I am not. In any way. Should I send it to SN? Me. I saw it, too. I find the picture on my phone. No need to even use a filter, because unlike absolutely everything else, it is perfect as is. Hit send. You have an IM from Liam Sandler. Liam, can you work tomorrow after school? Band practice. Me, sure. Liam, you are a lifesaver. Smiley face. Me, you ever realize how many of our day-to-day expressions are about death? Like someone just called me a lifesaver. SN, yeah, since, you know, it's everywhere. Dead meat. My mom's going to kill me. Died and went to heaven. But the worst part? As soon as someone says it, they look at me all apologetically, like I'm going to be offended or freak out or something. So, whose life did you save? Me. Just taking an extra shift at work. SN. That's nice of you. Me. Not really doing it out of the goodness of my heart. Will do anything for extra cash. SN. Anything? You have an IM from Ethan Marks. Ethan. From Merriam-Webster. Tuber. A short, thick, round stem that is a part of certain plants, such as the potato, that grows underground and that can produce a new plant. An IM from Ethan? 8 p.m. on a Thursday night? Which meant he was thinking about me, because you can't message someone without thinking about them first, right? Or maybe he was thinking about the wasteland, which isn't exactly the same as thinking about me, but close enough. The poem and I are now aligned. I'll take it. This is the sort of ridiculous analysis you engage in when you have a ridiculous crush, which I do not. Me. Huh. Kinda makes sense. The whole feeding a new life part of the poem. Ethan.
But why are they dried?
Me. No idea. Ethan.
I like the word tuber. Makes a good insult.
Me. Question marks. Example, please. Ethan.
Gem and crystal? Total tubers.
Although I know Ethan heard Gem be rude to me that first time, he was, of course, the whole reason for the what-are-you-looking-at fiasco that somehow set her off hating my guts. I didn't realize he hears all the crap she mutters under her breath in English class. Great. It's one thing to be mocked daily. It's a whole other thing when cute guys bear witness to it. Today, the target was the stickers that decorate the back of my laptop. Scarlett made them for me for my birthday last year, and they are awesome. All the tattoos I would get if I were the sort of person who had the nerve to get tattoos, which I am decidedly not. Instead, I'm the kind of person who has spent hours debating said theoretical tattoos, despite my crippling fears of both needles and long-term commitment. Hence, painless temporary stickers, two Korean characters that Scarlett swears say, best friend, the line, to thine own self be true, written in Gothic script, and lastly, a snake, which was not on my list, but which Scarlett added because she thought I should be more badass, even if only theoretically. Jem's brilliant take? I bet that says loser in Japanese. Me. Total dried tubers. And thanks. Ethan.
For what?
Me. I don't know. Defending me, I guess? Ethan.
I didn't.
Me.
Okay, then.
Ethan.
It's just that you don't seem like the kind of girl who needs defending.
Dree liked a photo of you and her on Instagram. I click. Dree and I at the lunch table. Agnes just out of the frame. Was she cropped out? I can't remember. Maybe. Possibly. I think so. That shouldn't make me happy. but it does. Scarlet, not that you asked, but homecoming dress has been procured. Fluorescent yellow. Me, you'll definitely stand out. Scarlet, don't need a dress to do that. Me, how's Adam? Psyched? Scarlet, think so. Having major breakout issues. Not just little ones, but big-ass whiteheads. Takes all my willpower not to attack them with my nails. Me, gross. Scarlet, too bad that wouldn't count toward our community service requirement. I'll admit it. I take a screenshot. 4 conversations at once. 4 different people who have something to say to me. True, one was about work. One was about a school assignment. One is with Scarlet, who doesn't count. And one is with someone I don't even know. But still, I'm going to count them all. Proof that maybe I'm starting to have something resembling a life again. Chapter 14. SN. 3 things to kick off your morning. 1. I'm terrified of flying. I hate every second I'm on an airplane. Man was not meant to fly. Me. Don't love to fly, but love airports. Great people watching. SN. Best hellos and goodbyes. Me. Exactly. SN. 2. I was a vegetarian for all of 8th and 9th grades, but I stopped because... bacon. Me. Bacon. SN. 3. I spend way too much time playing video games. And you? Me. Not so into video games. SN. You. 3 things. Me. Oh, right. 1. I generally don't like vegetables, but I hold a special place in my heart for the Brussels sprout. SN. With bacon. Me. 2. I'm a night person. Mornings suck. Why does school have to start so damn early? Why? SN. Then I'm honored you're talking to me before 8 a.m. Me. 3 cups of coffee. Gloria makes it strong. Have I told you about Gloria? SN. Question mark. Me. The step people's house manager. I was skeptical at first. It's weird having someone who does all this stuff for me. Don't tell. But now, I'm kind of in love. SN. Independence is overrated, as is being able to list laundry under mad skills. Me. 3. I'm a lefty, but when I was about 12, I decided I wanted to be a righty instead, so I trained myself to be ambidextrous. But now I think it's cooler to be a lefty, so there's 3 months of my life I'll never get back. SN. I'm a righty in all the things. All the things. Me. Was that an attempt at innuendo? SN. Your use of the word attempt suggests that I failed. Me. Hashtag innuendo failure. SN. I just said the word innuendo a bunch of times in my head, and now it's lost all meaning. Innuendo, 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 innuendo. Me. Word ruined for me forever. SN. Ruinuendo. Me. You are a dork. SN. Yes. Yes, I am. Good that you find this out now. Chapter 15.
It's literally just sex. I'm not sure why everyone makes such a big deal about it, Agnes says, and rolls onto her back on Dree's bed, so her head is hanging off the edge and her bangs fall backward. She has a large forehead. The bangs, it turns out, are less about being hipster cute and more tactical. It's Friday night, and instead of staying home with Harry Potter, I am here, eating potato chips from a jumbo-sized bag, flipping through the Wood Valley yearbook, and chatting with Dree and Agnes, as if this is what I always do on weekends.
and it doesn't feel too weird. When I start to get a little nervous that Agnes doesn't want me here, I remember that Dree invited me, even added a, come on, loser, when I said I might need to stay home and study. I chose to interpret her use of loser as affectionate.
Since when are you an expert? Dree asks and throws a pillow at Agnes. I don't care what you say. Technically, you're still a virgin.
I am not. I totally technically lost my V-card, Agnes says with faux indignation.
They sound like an old married couple who has had this particular fight before and neither cares how it turns out. The fun is in the fighting.
Technically? What does that even mean? I ask and look at Agnes. Please don't tell me you're one of those weirdos who, you know, count, oral.
Of course not. There was just a minor penetration issue, Agnes says and giggles. But it counts. It definitely counts.
I start laughing too, though I don't really get it.
What the what?
Agnes was half penetrated. She got slipped a half peen.
Half peen? That's hilarious, Agnes says,
and soon we're all laughing so hard we have tears falling down our cheeks.
Literally, I have no idea what that means. You have to tell me the whole story, I say. Okay, here's what went down, Agnes says.
No pun intended, I say.
Touché. So last summer at drama camp, and yes, I know, cliche, blah, blah, but at least it wasn't prom. Anyhow, this guy Stills and I are hooking up outside my bunk, and we're on the ground, and I think, okay, let's do this. I was kind of bored of the whole virginity thing, and so we get a condom, because safety first, right? And start to, you know, have sex with, you know, some penetration. And then all of a sudden, he totally freaks out. Apparently, he's all into, and I quote, his bro, JC, and wants to wait till marriage.
No way, I say.
He actually said, my bro, JC? Yep, humiliating on so many levels. So that's how I lost my virginity. It counts, right?
Agnes asks me, and I decide that maybe I've been too quick to judge her. She's funny and super honest and willing to laugh at herself. I get now why she and Dree are best friends.
I vote yes, I say,
because it's a hell of a lot closer than I've ever come to having a penis inserted into me.
But Dree's right, too. I totally got half-peened. How about you?
Agnes asks so casually. It's like she's asking what my favorite subject is.
Not yet. I mean, I'm not waiting till marriage or anything like that, but yeah, no real opportunity has presented itself, I say, which is the truth.
What I don't say? That I wouldn't mind if it happened with someone I liked and found attractive and who liked me back. I assume I won't lose my virginity until college, because that's when it seems to happen for girls like me.
Me neither, Dree says, and to go back to my original point, I'm not saying it's some huge deal or anything, but come on, it's not nothing.
Agnes says, so my sister goes to UCLA, and she's like this huge hobag there, right? And she says that sleeping with all these randos is her way of owning her sexuality. Agnes now sits up and faces both Dree and me, her bangs restored. She even has a file on Evernote where she keeps track of everyone she slept with.
You kind of have to admire her commitment, Dree says, banging for feminism.
We laugh again, and I think about Scar and how she'd feel right at home here. I continue to flip through the yearbook, looking but not looking for SN.
Hey, can I ask you guys a question? I ask.
Of course, Dree and Agnes say at the exact same time.
Scarlett and I used to do that too. We called them our mind-meld moments.
Do you know anyone in our class who had a sister who died?
I know I shouldn't try to figure out who SN is, that finding out might just ruin the best thing to happen to me in forever. But I can't help myself. I have this one nugget of information, and I want to run with it. Don't think so. Why? Dree asks.
Well, there's this guy, I say, and wonder how to tell this story without making it all sound weird.
SN and me are constant texting despite his anonymity. How I feel like he's really starting to know me, to see me, even though we've never even met.
So many great stories begin, there's this guy, Agnes giggles.
Shut up, Dree says. Let the girl talk.
And so I do. It feels like I'm in a safe room, and not despite Agnes's teasing, but maybe because of it. These are people who, if they aren't already, are well on their way to becoming my real friends. I don't mention the specifics, our new Three Things game, or how he told me to befriend Dree in the first place. The former, at least, belongs only to us. But I confess that I like him, whatever that means when you've only talked online.
You totally want him to half-peen you, Agnes says.
A girl can dream, I say. Later, when I get back to Rachel's house, I find Theo lingering outside our parents' bedroom, obviously eavesdropping.
You are not listening to them, you know, doing the nasty.
Please, please, please tell me that's not what's happening here, I demand.
Ew, gross, no, and shh, they're fighting, he says, and pulls me next to him, right near the door so I can hear them too.
Turns out that's unnecessary, because soon they're shouting so loud I'm sure the neighbors have turned off whatever reality show competition they are watching to tune into this instead.
I think they might be breaking up, and then this long national nightmare can come to an end.
Long national nightmare? Seriously? I ask.
What the hell, Rachel? It's just a fucking dinner, my dad says, and that's when I know it's serious.
My dad rarely curses, opts instead for the faux cursing favored only by 10-year-old girls and southern women and Dree. Shut the front door. Holy sugar. F off.
I need to study.
It's an important work dinner, and it's not unreasonable of me to want my husband there. We're married, remember? This is important to me, Rachel says, and I wish I could see through the door. Are they standing or sitting? Is Rachel the type to throw things, to smash the $1,000 accessories that litter the house? But who needs a 6-foot-tall white porcelain giraffe anyhow?
Forget it. Maybe it's better if you don't come.
What's that supposed to mean?
Nothing. It means nothing.
Oh, the passive-aggressive type. Says things without saying them. Agnes would hate her.
You and I both know this is not about you needing to study. You already told me you can take that test in your sleep.
Fine, I'll admit it. I wanted one night to myself. One night when I did not have to be judged by all of your friends. Do you think I don't see how they look at me? How you look at me when they're around? I even let you take me shopping so I can dress the part, but come on! Enough!
My dad says, and now my cheeks flame. No doubt, I feel out of my element at Wood Valley, but it never occurred to me that my dad would have trouble adjusting to life in L.A. too. That all this fitting in stuff doesn't end in high school.
No one is judging you, Rachel says, and her voice turns coaxing, soothing.
They all like you.
So sue me that I don't want to watch some indie movie about a Bengali leper who plays the harp with his toes. And you have some nerve correcting my drink order the other night like I'm a child. I wanted a beer with my steak, not an overpriced glass of Cabernet. Sorry if that offends your high-class sensibilities. That sort of stuff doesn't matter to me.
I was just trying to keep you from embarrassing yourself, Rachel says, and her voice starts to quaver.
Tears are imminent. I don't feel sorry for her.
At a place like that, you don't order beer. You just don't. I was just trying to signal to you.
I don't need signals. I'm a grown man. And just because I prefer burgers and beer to organic freshwater fancy-ass fish doesn't make me a barbarian. You knew who you were marrying. I've never pretended to be anyone else. Anyhow, I thought it was cool to be different out here.
Isn't that why you bought me those ridiculous sneakers? It's like you're training a pet.
It's one thing to have simple tastes. It's another to be downright anti-intellectual. Would it hurt you to read a book once in a while? Rachel asks. Turns out I was wrong. She's not going to cry. She's doubling down. She's rearing back.
Seriously? You're insulting my intelligence now? I've never seen you read a book. All that's on your night table is Vogue. Actually, the only person who reads around here is Jessie. She's the only sane person in this house.
Jessie's the only sane person in this house? Wake up, Bill. She has no friends. None. I was thrilled to send her to Wood Valley, but aren't you worried about her? Teenagers are supposed to go out and have fun, Rachel says.
Oh, so I'll be the one who will end up in tears. Of course. That's the way it goes these days. I want to yell back, right through the door. I've made friends. I'm doing my best. I don't need help. It's not my fault my mother died, that we moved here. I've had to start all over from scratch in every way that matters. My dad chose her, and even more inexplicable, she chose my dad, and I didn't choose either one of them. Sure, my dad's a nobody pharmacist from Chicago, but he's smart, damn it. Brilliant, even. So what if he loves WWF and action movies? My mom loved poetry, and even though my dad never did, they made it work. She let him be himself. My life is a shit sandwich with a side of jizz veggie burger. I don't have the strength. My eyes are blurry with tears, and I slide down the wall to the floor. Theo looks at me. She talks crap when she's mad. Ignore her, Theo whispers. She just likes to get her way.
You're one to talk about parenting, my dad's voice. My kid is amazing, so don't you dare. Have you looked at your kid lately? The way Theo gallivants all...
My dad stops, thank God. Oh, Dad, please don't say it.
All what? Rachel asks. My son is gay. So the hell what?
Rachel is goading him now. It sounds like she wants to fight. For a moment, I think it would be preferable to listen to them have sex. This is somehow even more intimate, more raw, even worse than witnessing her midnight tears. I don't want to be so close to these grown-up things. It's all so screwed up. Suddenly, I wonder if this is what happens when people meet on the internet. A connection without context. A good first impression so much easier to make because it can be manipulated. But they met in an online bereavement group, not a place normal people click for a hookup. It's hard picturing someone like Rachel turning to the internet to help with her grief. She's always so put together. The opposite of needy. As much as I'm not a huge fan, I'm starting to see why my dad was attracted to her. Despite being dealt the bad hand of widowhood, Rachel's getting an A-plus at life. She's successful and reasonably attractive and rich, but why did she marry my dad? He's not ugly as far as middle-aged men go, I guess, and he's kind. My mom used to say she was the luckiest woman in the world to have found him and to have built her life on such a stable foundation. But I'd imagine there are a million men like him in L.A. who come with fewer complications and more of their own cash. Why did she have to pick my dad? When my parents used to fight, I would slip away to my room and put on headphones. I didn't listen, especially because I knew the fight would last for days, two or three at least, when both of them would use me to talk to each other, one of the downsides of being an only child. Jessie, tell your father he needs to pick you up from school tomorrow. Jessie, tell your mother that we are out of milk. They didn't fight often, but when they did, it was explosive and unpleasant. Everything passes, Jessie. Remember that. What feels huge today will feel small tomorrow, she once said, right after a big fight with my dad. I don't remember what they were arguing about. Maybe money. But I do remember that it ended out of nowhere. 4 whole days after it started, when both of them just looked at each other and started cracking up. I think about that often. Not only how that fight broke, but what she said.
because I'm pretty sure she was wrong. Not everything passes.
Let me just make something clear here.
My dad's voice gets low and growly. He's calm, almost too calm, which is what he does when he's really angry, runs cold.
I'm not some ignorant homophobic hick, so stop talking to me that way.
Bill!
Forget it. I'm going for a walk. I need Aaron to get far away from you,
my dad says, so Theo and I scramble quickly down the hall. Surely my dad knows they've been yelling, but better for him not to know about our front row seats.
Good. Go! Rachel screams. And don't come back!
I'm in Theo's room now. I've only been in here once when I told him about my new job, so I take advantage of the opportunity to look around. He doesn't have anything on his walls, not a single framed picture on his desk, not much to see. Apparently he's a minimalist, like his mother.
You think they're going to get a divorce?
Theo asks, and it surprises me that my heart sinks at the thought. Not because I particularly like living here, but because we have nothing to go back to. Our house is gone. Our Chicago lives. And if we were to stay in L.A. and move to some sad little apartment, my dad couldn't afford to keep sending me to Wood Valley. I'd have to start again somewhere else. I'd have to say goodbye to my silly crush on Ethan, to my friendship with Dree and Agnes, to my whatever with S.N. When Rachel told my dad to not come back, did she expect me to leave too? Are we kicked out? I don't know, I say.
Would make things easier,
Theo says. For you, maybe. I have nowhere to go.
Not my problem.
No, it isn't, I say and stand to leave. I've had enough of these people.
Sorry, I didn't mean it. Was your dad going to call me a... Never mind.
He wouldn't have. He's not like that. Whatever. Want to smoke up? Theo reaches for his rolling papers. No thanks. And for real, he wouldn't have called you anything bad.
I'm not so sure.
I know my dad. He was going to say flamboyant, which, come on, you kind of are, I say, and wonder if I've overstepped my boundaries. I hold eye contact with Theo to let him know that I am not trying to be hurtful, just honest.
I knew in, like, kindergarten that I'm gay, so I figure I should own it, you know? Give the people what they want,
Theo says, and starts digging through his drawers.
No one should be spared my fabulousness.
Lucky us, I say, but I smile. I'm starting to have a new appreciation for Theo. He approaches life with manic enthusiasm, an antidote to most of Wood Valley's laconic teenagerness. There's a layer of kindness underneath him, too, and he's authentic in his own over-the-top way.
So who are you texting with all the time?
He asks, and again it occurs to me that he could be SN. Maybe he wanted to help me, without having to face our bizarro new family situation. Maybe I've misinterpreted. Maybe SN's flirtation was actually just Theo's enthusiasm. I hope not. None of your business, I say, which doesn't seem to bother him in the least.
Since you don't smoke, want to stress eat instead? I have some emergency Godiva somewhere around here, he says, and finds what he's been looking for, a giant chocolate bar.
I'm in, I say.
So you think your dad signed a prenup?
Theo asks. And I hate him, all over again. Chapter 16 SN. Three things. One, had waffles this morning in your honor. Two, when I graduate, I really want to disrupt the beverage industry. I mean, water, coffee, tea, juice, soda, and a few weird hybrids. We can do better. Three, I used to dream about my sister all the time, and I'd wake up all shaky and it sucked. But now I don't dream about her at all. Turns out that's worse. Me. One. I don't dream about my mom anymore either. But sometimes I totally forget that she's gone.
I'll think, oh, she'll love this story. I'll tell her when I get home. And then I remember all over again. That's the worst. 2. I didn't have waffles this morning. I had some sort of organic wheatberry granola from Whole Foods that the step monster loves, and though it was delicious, I still have no idea WTF a wheatberry is. 3. I've never used the word disrupt in relation to any industry. What does that even mean? Are you sure you're 16? SN.
17, actually, and I now have my billion-dollar idea. Wheatberry juice.
Me. You are so Wood Valley. What, $1 million idea wasn't good enough? I head straight to work after school. I'm not avoiding home. Not really. But what if my stuff has already been packed up again into my duffel bags? Gloria would do it carefully and respectfully, take the time to fold my bras, ziplock my shampoo bottles, and the whole Rachel Dad experiment is over, just like that. Poof. What will happen to me? At breakfast, I was the only one sitting at the table, and when Theo stopped in to grab a juice, he just raised an eyebrow and shrugged. Apparently, he's as much in the dark as I am. A few minutes later, Rachel came in, and she did that busy thing she does, where she talks out loud to no one in particular, or maybe to herself, a whirling dervish of nervous energy and rhetorical questions. "Coffee! Where's the coffee?" she asked, though it was exactly where it always is. In the coffee maker, brewed by Gloria, or an automatic early morning timer, I'm not sure which, though I put my money on the former. Gloria is amazing at doing things without you seeing her do things, and also doing all the things you didn't even know you needed done in the first place. If we have to leave, I might miss Gloria the most. She calls me Yessie and folds my pajamas under my pillow and insists I eat chocolate calcium chews. And Keys, where are you, Keys? In my bag. Damn it, where's my bag? Like all of Rachel's belongings, apparently my dad was also MIA, and for a second, I panicked that maybe he'd taken off without me and headed back east. When the worst thing you could possibly imagine happens to you, you think maybe other previously inconceivably bad things can happen too. But no way would he ditch me. Of course, I never thought he'd lie about a convention and come back remarried instead of loaded up with samples to give to his middle-aged friends like a normal person. But still, except for the last few months, he's been a good dad. Sunglasses? Rachel asked, which made me realize just how rattled she must have been by last night's fight, because she started patting down the empty white countertops as if her sunglasses would appear out of thin air. Sunglasses are not usually part of her morning soliloquy. On your head, I said. And then she jumped a little and looked up at me, as if my voice caught her by surprise and she was just noticing I was sitting here. She looked sad for a moment, or disappointed, but then she pulled her glasses off her head and put them on, and just like that, most of her face was covered, and I couldn't read her at all. Liam's sitting on the desk when I get to work, playing his guitar and singing to an audience of zero. Turns out I was right. Book Out Below doesn't get a whole lot of customer action. A few regulars here and there, one guy who thumbs books in the self-help section but never buys, and that's about it. Imagine, huh? A classic. I'm surprised by Liam's voice. It's soft, earnest, almost sweet. He looks different with a guitar. Dree's crush makes total sense. Sorry, didn't hear you come in. Liam swings Earl off his shoulder and slides him back into his purple fur-lined case. It's a graceful move, one I'm sure he's done 1,000 times. You don't have to stop on my account. I wonder if I can somehow slip my phone out and secretly record him for Dree, but then realize that's just too weird and invasive. You're good. I mean, for real. Thanks. I want to go to Berklee College of Music next year if I get in, but my mom doesn't want me going so far, he says. Wow,
I say. That's in Boston, right?
Yep. Honestly, what I'd really like to do is skip college and try to hit it big with the Oville guys. But my mom would go postal. I keep telling her that's what Maroon 5 did. They're from Brentwood School, you know? But she's all, Maroon what?
I laugh, try to think of what to say next.
So are you coming?
He asks, saving me from my embarrassingly blank brain.
Excuse me? To my gig at Jem's party.
When is it again? Of course I remember when it is. Dree and Agnes have already convinced me that we should all go, and have even picked out my outfit. They claim Crystal and Jem will be so wasted, they won't even notice I'm there.
Next Saturday night, Liam says. Okay, so it's not a real gig at a club or anything, but it'll be fun. Promise.
Cool. I'll definitely try to make it. Liam pats the desk, an invitation for me to sit next to him. I jump up and sit cross-legged, but turn so my back rests against the wall. I scan the children's section behind his head, check out the bright covers of the books, which are shelved to face outward. They are not shy at all.
Are you working today, too? I ask.
I hope not. Working with Liam makes me uncomfortable. It's hard to make conversation for 3 hours in a row. There are only so many times he can tell me about the food at his Google internship, which apparently was really, really good. I mean, we don't talk the whole time. Thank God for my iPhone, which I pull out whenever I feel awkward, but that only gets me so far. Now that I know the basics here, I'm not sure why we would both need to be on duty. It's not like there's anything to really do anyway.
Yeah, if you don't mind, I need the cash, so...
Oh, I mean, do you want me to go then? I ask, and my heart sinks. Dree and Agnes go to Coffee Bean every day after school. As sad as it sounds, I need Ice Blended money. And also this. I don't want to go home. If my dad and I have to move again, will SN and I still write to each other? Will he finally tell me who he is?
Nah, I figured we could both work. My mom doesn't care.
I wonder if he feels sorry for me, looks down on me the same way his girlfriend does, and that's why he's letting me stay. I've noticed the scholarship kids at Wood Valley. You can tell by their clothes and how they stick together in non-designer clumps. No one seems to pay any attention to them. The other day, some girl wore a t-shirt that said Gap across the front. Jem didn't even nudge Crystal. For whatever reason, I seemed to be her only target.
You sure? I ask.
Crap. I sound hopeful, even to my own ears.
I'm sure.
And then Liam picks up Earl again and begins to play.
Dree, shut up. He's serenading you right now? For real? I'm coming there.
Me, I think he's playing original Oville stuff.
Dree, OMG. Wait, if I come, it will be too obvious, right?
Right.
Shoot, can you call me and leave the line open?
Me, really?
Dree, no, that's too stalkerish. Even for me.
Ah!
Me,
you were right. He's actually really good.
Dree, you're killing me right now.
Me, if it makes you feel any better, I wish it were you here instead of me. I have calc homework. If only I got paid to do that.
Dree, admit it. He's hot.
Me, not my type, but...
Dree, but what?
Me, let's just say... I get it now. Liam starts playing a new song, one I've never heard before. The lyrics go, the girl that no one knows, the one that secretly glows, all right. The girl that no one knows is mine, all mine, all mine. It's catchy.
Scarlett, should I have sex with Adam Kravitz after homecoming?
Me.
What?
Scarlett, was just thinking it might be nice to lose my V-card to someone who's not intimidating, you know? Then it's done and I can move on. Me, is that what you want? Just to be done with it?
Scarlett, maybe.
Me, I'm not saying sex is such a big deal or anything, but it's not nothing, you know?
I realize I'm quoting Dree here, but I think she's right. It's not nothing. Not to get all parental,
But there are diseases and pregnancy, and, yeah, I know Scarlett would use a condom. We've all seen 16 and pregnant, which is the best form of birth control ever. But still. Adam Kravitz? My old neighbor Adam Kravitz? The only guy who's ever shown any interest in me, if you call interest making out with me once, drunk, at the bowling alley on a Saturday night? My history with him isn't the issue, though. Scarlett is free to be half-peened or full-peened by him. I just think she's being a little faux casual about the whole thing. She's more like Dree and me than Agnes's sister, as much as she talks a big game. There's a difference between talking about sex and even being comfortable about talking about sex, and actually doing it. Abstractly, sex is simple. One person's body parts touching another person's. Nothing more, nothing less. But for some of us, the reality is something altogether more complex. Equal parts exciting and scary. I can't explain why, but I just know that's how it seems to me. Scarlett, don't freak out, was just a thought. Me, not freaking out. If you want to do it, then you should. But just make sure, because the same argument for doing it applies to not doing it. Once it's done, it's done. And I know you don't need me to tell you to be safe. Scarlett, Adam's face is clearing up. I think he may be on Accutane. Me. Ooh, I want to see. Send pictures. Scarlett, I miss you, Jay. Me. Me too, S. You have no idea. Scarlett, question mark. Me. Dad and the lady of the manor had a big-ass fight. Was scary. Scarlett. And? Me. I don't know. For newlyweds, they don't seem so happy. Scarlett, my parents have been married for 18 years, and they fight all the time. Sometimes I think they hate each other. They claim otherwise. Me, your parents enjoy fighting. It's their happy place. Scarlett, I probably won't do it with Adam. Me, question mark. Scarlett, but then again, I might. There's traffic on Ventura, so I don't get home till after 8. Gloria has left me dinner on the counter, a perfectly serrated leg and thigh of roasted chicken, string beans tossed with almonds, a dainty portion of mashed potato all showcased under a glass dome. My silverware sits on a cloth napkin. In Chicago, we used paper towels. My mom was an okay cook, a little too prone to experimentation, but I miss her big, hearty stews, everything thrown together and unidentifiable. My dad's car is in the driveway, but Rachel's is gone, and I don't hear any noise coming from upstairs, not even the steady bass that usually emits from Theo's room. I eat my chicken alone at the kitchen island, wipe my mouth, and am about to head upstairs when I notice someone sitting on the deck. Dad. I open the glass doors and step outside. Wrap my arms around myself, because there's a sharp breeze and a bite to the air I associate with Chicago. Hey, I say, and my dad gives me the same look Rachel gave me this morning, as if my very existence comes as a surprise. I am here, I want to scream. Why am I so easily forgotten?
My sweetheart, didn't hear you.
Sit with me. I flop down into the lounge chair next to him. I want to ask about our status. Are we evicted? But I don't have the courage. What are you doing out here? I ask.
Just thinking.
Ouch, I say, and my dad smiles.
It occurred to me just now that I'm finally, officially in every single way a person can be, a bona fide grown-up. But honestly, sometimes I forget and think I'm 22. You know what I mean?
He asks. I hope he knows I do not. How could I? 22 sounds old to me. If it helps clarify things any, I'm pretty sure you're 44. You've been a grown-up for a long, long time in my book, I say.
Right. You're almost a woman yourself, and I'm your father. But damn, I don't know. I don't know if I'm equipped for adult life, any of it.
His voice suddenly turns raw and shaky. After my mom died, I never saw him cry. Not once. But in those first few months, he had perpetually watery and bloodshot eyes, as if he had just finished weeping somewhere unseen. I don't say anything, because I don't know what to say. My mom is not here to help us. I'm not equipped for this life either.
I wish when you were little someone had said to me, "These are the good times. Right now. These are the good times. You are young and things are simple. And one day it's all going to blow up in your face or bottom out or whatever metaphor you want to use. Your mom would have a good one for us. And so relax and enjoy while you can." When I first started out, I used to have nightmares that I gave out a wrong prescription, that I gave Mrs. Jalurari Valium instead of her heart medication, or that I dosed out the Zakowitz's kids' lithium incorrectly. Your mom and I, though, that part was always easy. I feel his shoulders start to shake, and so I stare straight ahead. If he's going to cry, if he is going to choose right now to fall apart, after everything, after him making all of the decisions, selling our house, getting remarried, moving us here, and my having no choice in the matter, none, I will not look at him. I'm sorry, but I cannot give him that. A wise person in our family used to say, "What doesn't kill you makes you stronger." I say, "Because that is the best I can do." An empty morsel. I can't say, "Mom." I can't do that either. "I know it's not fair that you're the one having to comfort me," he says, eyes on the hills, looking out at the other houses, before glancing back at me. "I do realize that you are the kid here."
"Am I?" I ask. I hadn't noticed. He makes his hands into fists and taps his eyes, 1, 2, 3, and then drops them, as if he is done with the self-pity.
"You are just like your mom. An old soul. When you were a baby, you used to lie in your crib and look up at me, and I remember thinking, 'Man, this kid already sees right through me.'"
I look over at him. He is wrong. I don't see right through him. He is deeper and more complex than he likes to admit. I've seen him order Cabernet with steak many times, happily. "Dad?" The question forms again. "Are we leaving?" But I let it go. Nothing. Never mind.
"So 44 is really old."
His face brightens. He's now recovered from whatever gripped him. "Ancient," I say.
"Better tell Gloria to add Depends to the shopping list, then."
A stupid joke, maybe, but I laugh anyway because I can. I can give him that much. Chapter 17 SN 3 things. 1, my first crush was on Wonder Woman. I'm a sucker for a girl with a lasso. 2, my mom has a whole pharmacy in her medicine cabinet. Xanax, Vicodin, Percocet, all the good stuff, and she takes them all the time, like it's a problem. 3, you have beautiful hands. Me, not in order, but 1, I have my mom's hands. She used to play piano. I quit after 2 lessons, but I should have stuck with it. Sometimes I listen to her favorite pieces and pretend she's playing. Oh, wow. Can't believe I just told you that. 2, I was Wonder Woman for Halloween a few years ago, except I wore pants instead of blue undies. Chicago equals cold. 3, how's this for irony? My dad is actually a pharmacist. For real. So I know about all those drugs. I'm sorry about your mom.
Hey, dried tubers,
Ethan says when I meet him in the library. Same shirt every day. Same chair by the coffee cart. And now the same table where we met last time. This guy has his routines down. Really? That's how it's going to be? I say, though I smile. I like the familiarity. that he would call me a nickname at all. I thought you said it made a good insult.
I decided we should take back